Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Dawn B. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Southern California. Today is Wednesday, June 17th, 2026, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we're reading from the Big Book and we're on page 45, the third paragraph. We know how he feels through eight sentences ending inexplicable calamity and deep skepticism, and we'll be commenting on these eight sentences today. Today's readers, 12 Steps, Linda S., 12 Traditions, Jeannie G., readers of the text, Eileen M., Michelle A.C., and Leslie M. The reference number for Tuesday, June 16th, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 23,554. That's 23554. And for this morning, Wednesday, June 17th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, the reference number is 23,556. That's 23556. Our newcomer greeter this morning is Devorah S., and Shelley E. will do the announcements. Thank you to everyone providing service for this meeting. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. I'll now ask Linda S. to please read the 12 steps of OA. Morning, Linda.
Hi, everyone. This is Linda S. in Sweden. Can I be heard?
We lost you, Linda.
Okay, I'll try again. Linda S. in Sweden. Can I be heard now?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wonderful. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me read.
Thank you so much, Linda S. And I'll now ask Jeannie G. to please read the 12 traditions of OA. Good morning, Jeannie.
Good morning, Dawn. This is Jeannie G. in Michigan, and here are the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Oh, thank you so much, Janie G. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and then stop and share in what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book, and we're on page 45, the third paragraph. We know how he feels through 8 sentences, ending with inexplicable calamity and deep skepticism. And we'll be commenting on these 8 sentences only today. I will now ask Eileen M. to please read and then share with us. Good morning, Eileen.
Good morning, Dawn. Thank you for your service. My name is Eileen M. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in New Hampshire. We know how he feels. We have shared his honest doubt and prejudice. Some of us have been violently anti-religious. To others, the word God brought up a particular idea of him with which someone had tried to impress them during childhood. Perhaps we rejected this particular conception because it seemed inadequate. With that rejection, we imagined we had abandoned the God idea entirely. We were bothered with the thought that faith and dependence upon a power beyond ourselves was somewhat weak, even cowardly. We looked upon this world of warring individuals, warring theological systems, and inexplicable calamity with deep skepticism. Wow. There's such validation in that statement, that first sentence, we know how he feels. Because, you know, after all, this whole chapter is about doubting the existence of God, you know, agnosticism. And, wow, it just kind of brings me back to my history. Is I was raised in a rigid, patriarchal religion. The image of God I had as a younger person was one that was critical, harsh, unloving, and unforgiving. And, you know, when I first came into OA, it was quite a while ago, in the 80s, we only had the Big Book available then. And I remember thinking, why would God want to help me? I had this strong conviction at the time that I did not deserve God's help. And, you know, yeah, as I think back, I remember rejecting the word God in the book because to me it implied a religious concept that I thought had failed me. And, you know, God had not brought me things that I wanted specifically for my life at that point. And I thought, well, that's what you're supposed to ask God for, right, is what you want. And I really believed that. And, you know, because I wasn't getting what I wanted, I just concluded that, oh, well, God must not be on my side. So God wants really nothing to do with me. And this religion I grew up with is, you know, you're supposed to fear God. You're supposed to be afraid of God, afraid of making mistakes, afraid of disappointing God, you know, all that. And, you know, that was a real obstacle to me. But, you know, the problem was I had nowhere else to go because OA was kind of a last stop for me. I had tried everything else to get free of food obsession, and nothing else worked for me except this. This is the only thing that worked was, you know, this process of going through the 12 steps with entire abstinence. That's the only thing that ever worked. And, you know, I had to find a different concept of God, something different than what I was taught. And, you know, this whole thing about warring individuals, yeah, that means conflict between people, you know, wars, et cetera, that they're talking about. And, you know, since coming to OA, I've heard so many people say that, you know, how can there be this loving God with all the calamity that's going on, you know? That's such a common thing. I think it's such a human belief, a human thing. But, you know, the truth is there is this loving higher power that you can find, you know, doing this process. And this process is just one way of finding it. But this was the only way that I was able to find it. So I'm really grateful, and thanks so much. Pass.
Oh, thank you, Eileen M. Beautiful way to get us started there. We are talking about page 45, that third paragraph, starting with, we know how he feels through eight sentences ending inexplicable calamity and deep skepticism. And we're commenting on these eight sentences today. So we do value your experience, but we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So who would like to share on these eight sentences with us today?
Wendy B.
Wendy B.
Margo B.
Mary.
Margo B.
Mary Frances W.
Mary Frances W. All right. We'll start with that lineup. We have Wendy
Bruce
B.
E.
And Bruce E. And who came after Bruce?
Gail F.
Gail F. And was there another person?
Did you get Jan C. from Denver?
I did not. Jan C. from Denver. Got it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. All right.
Diana Y. from Philly.
Diana Y. All right. Let's go ahead and stop there. Okay. I have Wendy B., Margot B., Mary Frances W., Bruce E., Gail F., Jan C., and Diana Y. Beautiful lineup. Wendy B., please go ahead and start us off. Your 3 minutes starts now.
Good morning. This is Wendy B., recovered in Arizona. And I looked up the word doubt and prejudice. So doubt is a mental state of uncertainty, hesitation, lack of conviction, and unbelief. And prejudice is preconceived opinion grounded in misconception. And you know, I can relate to those definitions. You know, when I look at the world around me and the broken people inhabiting it and the unjust things going on, you know, it's easy to doubt there's a God in control, you know, and running the show. But when I take my eyes off those external temporal things and go within, you know, I can sense God's presence. You know, I can feel peace and calm. I can let go of those doubts and uncertainties and just put them in God's hands for him to sort out, you know, and I can choose to trust him regardless of my outward circumstances. And the idea that I'm weak, you know, for having faith in an unseen God, you know, is understandable. You know, I am weak. I need a crutch. You know, I've come to realize, like the big book says, that I have a broken leg too and I need a crutch. You know, and relying on God is not being weak, but accepting my human condition. And I also love that we learn in program to not be religious. you know, following, you know, legalistic rules, but we develop a personal relationship with our God, and, you know, we continue to expand and grow, you know, and explore. And, you know, we're taught to, you know, question and go to God, you know, and resolve our doubts and stuff. And that's all I have. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Wendy B. from Arizona. Margot B., it's your turn, followed by Mary Frances W.
Hi, Margot B. here from New York. Compulsive overeater, great to be able to claim my seat. I'm so, like, I don't know, just moved. I'm doing some grieving, and I'm very grateful for that because I feel like God softens my heart when I go through a grieving process. And I can learn, you know, and during that time, right, I have to not seek the ease and comfort from people, places, things, food, a little extra this, a little extra that, or what's sexy out there in terms of eating, but instead the ease and comfort of the God of my understanding. And people know how I feel. I know how other people feel because it's the power of identification. And I found it very awe-inspiring when I heard the word calamity, because it's through the struggle of connecting with my higher power, learning and understanding what that really means, when then I have these moments of true connection with God, and then I have that reference point, and then I can be sitting in the foundation of that, so that the calamity that they're referring to here, because in the promises it's like serenity, I meet calamity with serenity and I will know peace. And it is for me, I tried so hard figuring this all out, writing about it, doing the steps opposed to experiencing the steps, so that God can get from my head to my heart. And it was through just through whatever he put in my path, learning to surrender moment by moment, little by slowly, so that I can learn to rest in him a little bit better today than yesterday, and or even from the moment before, you know, and just to really understand, like, God is everything or God is nothing. What is my choice to be? Do I rely on finite self or infinite God? And to know, to really know, not I think this or I think that, but to truly know. And every little piece of work leads me closer to that. So I just pray that I keep staying open to the process. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Margot B. from New York. Mary Frances W., it's your turn to share, followed by Bruce E.
Hi, this is Mary Frances W., recovered in Pennsylvania, and I just want to thank everybody for their amazing shares already this morning, and I'm moved by all of that. And, you know, when I read this paragraph, it brings up when I first came to OA, and like the first speaker, I was brought up in a religion, very rigid and patriarchal, and I feared God and, you know, towed the line. I was Sister Mary Frances. I was, you know, the good little girl who was afraid to step over the line and make mistakes, or I was going to be damned to hell forever. And so when I heard God mentioned in OA, I didn't think that it was for me. And when I came to my first meeting, I so related to what people in the room were saying, like they were speaking my story. And so I had this conflict. What was I going to do? And I will forever be grateful to the person who said to me, well, who do you want your God to be? And, you know, again, in that religion that I was brought up with, it was sacrilegious, you know, for me to come up with my own concept of God. And I just want to say to whoever's out there and has that same fear of, you know, looking at what they believe and challenging it, that it's okay that we have a God that loves us and wants us to question and wants us to understand who he really is. And, you know, he is boundless. Like, there's no way that we could describe him, because he's so much more than we could ever define him. And I'm just so grateful that, you know, this last person that said to truly know, like, since I came back in November, like, I truly know my innermost being, that I am a real compulsive overeater. And now to truly know in my heart that God is everything, you know, I just don't ever want to take that for granted, that He is everything. And sometimes I find myself resting on my laurels, and, you know, then I find myself having to do my 10 steps because I'm in my feelings and, you know, not putting God first. And so today I'm grateful that we are in this chapter, we agnostics, and we're focusing on how important it is to have a relationship. And again, if you're struggling with this, I just, you know, tell you, please stay along for the ride, because, you know, you allow yourself to establish this relationship with God and you will not regret it. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Mary Frances W. from Pennsylvania. Bruce E., it's your turn, followed by Gail F.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody on the line.
Bruce E., recovering.
Yeah, Southwest Florida. Tremendous shares and tremendous reading here. Either God is everything or He's nothing. But I didn't know that big part of my life, half my life. And I was violently anti-religious. I had a lot of doubt and prejudice. The only thing, I didn't get religion pushed down my throat when I was young, so not so much. But I just remember the example my mom set for me, and seeing her in the wintertime in northern Illinois walking down the sidewalk to church Sunday morning with these blue suede high-heeled shoes on and a blue dress to match and a hat to go with it, and going there, and I'm just staying home with my brother and my dad. You know, we're just sleeping in or whatever. But I just thought anyone that was spiritual was kind of weird, you know. And so I had that doubt and prejudice thinking something is and when it really isn't, and doubted that could help me in any way. I didn't see how it, even though my mom was really successful in her life, and she was tremendous. She read a book every day. She was just had a brain like a genius. But I rejected all that. I rejected the God idea entirely. So I had to go out in the world and get beat up. You know, it just had to happen. You know, so I leave high school. I go homeless for a couple of years. I go to jail a dozen times, face a prison term, and came through all that. And now that I look back on it, even the way I was doing and what I was acting, you know, all these addictions, God had His, in this invisible hand was around me all the time, and didn't know it then, but now looking back on it, I know it. And it finally, God loved me so much that He brought me into this program, because then I thought I could use, you know, use religion you know, I use the religious model, you know, going forward in church, pray for me, I got food addiction, you know, and I did that. That didn't work. But the only thing that worked was God that loved me so much that He brought me right into OA, brought me right into Vision. God knew what I needed to, you know. Yeah, thank you. I pass.
Oh, thank you so much, Bruce E. from Florida. Gail F.
Paragraph, please.
Sure, sure. We're talking about page 45, that third paragraph, starting with, we know how He feels, through eight sentences ending, inexplicable calamity and deep skepticism. And we're talking about those eight sentences. So, Gail F., it's your turn to share, followed by Jan C.
Good morning. I'm Gail F., a newcomer to today's phone meeting, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, and I want to thank everyone for the wonderful shares, and I've been through the reading and what you shared. It really resonated with me, just the word process, because for me it's been a long process to get to my higher power. And I just remember in my youth how much I rebelled against a God and said to my religious leader, how do you know some bunch of people didn't sit under a tree and write this book that you're making us believe in? And my parents were very hypocritical because they would take us to, I'm Jewish, we'd go to a temple on high holidays. My father would come in very late because he was working or not at all. And a lot of the holidays, it was kind of like, just kind of lip service. I never really felt a deep commitment or spiritual experience to my God. And not until one religious leader really sat me down and basically said a story, and I don't have the time to share it, but basically then who invented all this? Photosynthesis, the human brain, the way the planets don't collide, all of that. How did that all happen? And I didn't know. And that made me, my answer, I don't know, gave me just a mustard seed of maybe there is something greater than me. And for me, the lack of power, that was my dilemma and my compulsive eating. And I was faced with my sponsor that I had to find a power which I could live with, and it could be a power greater than myself. And that started my deep and religious spiritual connection to my higher power. And it has gotten so deep because of the 12 steps in this program. And I do rely on a power greater than me, and that faith dependence upon that power is not weak. I used to think it would be somewhat weak for me to depend on that or cowardly. And it's what gives me strength, and it gives me direction in my life. And I truly have my own conception of God, not some religious or my parents', you know, dogma of what God is or isn't. It's been a process that I've gotten a strong, deep relationship with the power greater than mine. And just so glad that we're reading this section and these sentences and what Irene shared really hit home for me. And I'm so grateful for the 12 steps and traditions and all of you that I'm on this path, trudging it together side by side. And that's it. I'll pass.
Oh, thank you, Gail. And did you want to let us know where you're calling from, Gail?
I'm Chicago.
Chicago, perfect. And please stick around to the end of the meeting when we allow newcomers a chance to announce their names and numbers. We'd love to hear from you then. Thank you so much. Yeah. Thanks for being here, Gail. All right, Jan C., it's your turn, followed by Diana Y., and then I'll be taking some more names.
Hi there, Dawn, and everybody on this vision meeting this morning. Thank you so much for being here. My name is Jan C., and I'm recovered just one day at a time here in Colorado. It's so interesting to read this today because I'm one of those people who didn't have a prejudice against God. I was raised with a very strong Christian background. I just even felt close to God in the mornings in the winter when I'd walk to Mass before I went to school as a real young girl. But what has developed since I've been in program is a much closer relationship with God, the God of my understanding. I don't know that I ever picked up that God was so vengeful as many people experience, but I never realized how God loved me so personally and is helping me with everything in my life, including this food, for goodness sake. And being abstinent is just the ticket in the door for me. And once I've been able to open that door with my higher power's power, oh my goodness, tremendous things have happened. So my testimony, if you will, this morning is that God loves each of us as though we're his only kid. And yet, my God does not ever push anything on me. I go to my God for help, and I get it. And I'm a big God box thumper. So when I have concerns, I put them in there. If the concern comes up again, I put it in there again. And I find so much comfort, and that is with the food and with living life. and I think I'm supposed to be in this program, learn how to deal with food so it doesn't interfere with living life. So I thank you all on Vision, and thanks, Dawn, for your service and everybody else who's keeping this meeting safe. That's it for me today. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you, Jan C. from Denver. Diana Y., it's your turn to share with us.
Hi, I'm Diana from Philadelphia. I'm a sugar addict. The idea of God was my complete downfall for 32 years of my 43 years in program, because it started when I was 12 years old, and my grandpa, who was really the only man in my life, I had a dad, he lived with us, but he was a loner, and he kept himself separate, and he showed absolutely no positive emotions at home. So I really loved my grandpa, and he got stomach cancer, and I prayed and prayed, and he died. So there is no God. That was my idea about a higher power. At my first meeting I went to, I had no idea why this Overeaters Anonymous, this group, did not charge when every other, quote, diet place did. And then I heard the word God, and I said, oh, that must be the catch. And I said, I'm just going to ignore that part and see what the rest is like. And so I did ignore it for all those years. Until I started studying the big book. And it says that we can hardly expect to recover if we don't have a higher power. It's the higher power that takes the obsession and craving away. I thought if you believed in a God that you were weak and you're a coward. And it turns out that it's the opposite, that I have become so much stronger with my belief in God and my higher power, and that I can let go of all the things that give me the most pain, and my future that I think I used to have control over. It's given me freedom, actually. And God took away in an instant my obsession and craving for sugar. And I don't know how that's possible. I had it my whole life. And under my power, I could do nothing about it. And, of course, I could diet.
Time.
And that's what I thought my power was. But it turned out I always went back to the sugar. Oh, thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Diana Y. from Philadelphia. All right. Well, we are talking about page 45 today, that third paragraph. We know how he feels through eight sentences ending inexplicable calamity and deep skepticism. And we're talking about those eight sentences today. And we do value your experience, but we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So who would like to share with us?
Laura W.
Laura W.
Patty F.
Patty F.
Donna B.
Donna B. Who else might like to share? Star one.
Haley O.
Haley O. All right, let's go with that lineup. I have Laura W., Patty F., Donna B., and Haley O. Laura W., please share with us.
Hey, good morning, Dawn. Thank you so much. This is Laura W., recovered compulsive eater, anorexic and exercise bulimic in South Jersey. Great to be on a meeting live today. This is such a great paragraph. You know, after this page in the big book, it doesn't talk about alcohol anymore at all, and we're only up to page 45. So for the rest of the book, what is it talking about, right? If it's not talking about alcohol or the substance, then what's the point, right? So what I realized is that it doesn't talk about religion. It doesn't talk about God per se. It talks about the need for a higher power. And that's what this entire book is about. That it doesn't try to convince me of the existence of God. It doesn't even try to convince me that you must believe in God in order to recover. It rather tries to prove to me the need for a higher power. So it's telling me, how's your way working for you? Like, how has your self-will run riot so well that, you know, you can figure this thing out? And I was brought up in a very religious home, going to mass every Sunday, having to wear a skirt or a dress to church, it showed respect, having to go to CCD classes, and you know, I did it. And I look back, and I'm grateful that my parents gave me that foundation. I did go my own way in my disease. I turned away from God. I turned away because I turned to self. The disease is selfish, self-centered to the extreme. But, you know, so my conception now has changed, but I do believe in God. I do believe in a higher power, and I turn my will and my life over to this higher power. I don't really know, I can't really say what exactly my higher power is. I just know that it's not me. I just know that I have a faith and a dependence on a power beyond myself. And for me, this is merely a beginning. You know, this step two is merely a beginning. I have to be willing to believe, and I have to continue to believe. And, you know, and I do believe also that somewhere deep down in all of us is a fundamental idea of a higher power. So all of these warring individuals, warring theological systems and all that, I am skeptical in certain ways, but in other ways, I truly, truly know, you know, I know that there's a higher power because I'm alive today, and there's no other explanation for that other than a power greater than myself. And I'm grateful that this book tries to teach me that because I need to learn. I really need to learn. I need to learn to look for a way to learn to know God more. Thanks for letting me share. I pass.
Oh, thank you, Laura W. from New Jersey. Patty F., it's your turn, followed by Donna B.
Hi, this is Patty F. from Massachusetts. I'm pretty nervous about sharing, but I grew up in a religion, but it wasn't really, I didn't understand what God was or anything like that, so I kind of got away from it. I was very ashamed of who I was as I got older, and you know, now I've kind of gotten back to a different religion, and I enjoy it. And I know that God is working in me. He woke me up this morning, and I was in a good mood. And that didn't happen very often when I was in the food, you know. And I just thank him, you know. And no, what you think of God is none of my business. and what I think of God is none of your business. So we each have our beliefs, and that's why we can coexist. So thanks.
Thank you so much, Patty F. from Massachusetts. Donna B., it's your turn, followed by Haley O.
Good morning. This is Donna B. I spell my name D-A-N-A, but it is pronounced Donna. Compulsive overeater, bulimic, and restrictor. From Denver, Colorado. And, you know, when I first came into the rooms, it was suggested to me that I act as if. And that seemed like a pretty reasonable suggestion because I had been running around my life pretending to be something I wasn't. So when I heard the term act as if, I heard pretend to be something you're not, and to sort of parrot what other people were saying about God. And it did not help me to get to know a power greater than myself or to develop a relationship with that power. But what I understand today from the phrase act as if is to go about my life expecting an experience of a higher power. To go through life with a curiosity of how God is working in my life. So prayers like, show me God, where you have been showing up in my life. Show me God, where I can express my greatest amount of gratitude towards you. Show me God, the miracles that you're performing in my life, that there's absolutely no way that I could have manifested on my own. So acting as if is not pretending, but it's living for me with the expectation that God is showing up and that God is working in my life. And part of that is prayer, spending time with my higher power. So I do pray every morning and I pray every night. And when I have the recollection to rely on my higher power throughout the day, then I also pray then as well. And that's an opportunity for me to continue to draw closer to this higher power that I can't define, that I don't know in the same way that I know, certain human beings in my life. But I continue to practice and to build the muscles of being in a relationship with a higher power. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Donna B. from Colorado. Haley O., it's your turn to share, and then I'll take another name.
Hi, this is Kaylee O. Can you hear me?
Sure can. Mm-hmm.
Hi, Kaylee O. from South Jersey. I really appreciate, thanks, Don, for taking the meeting. I appreciate everybody who shared before me. What really stood out for me is in the reading was the warring individuals and, all this conflict in the world. And when I came into the rooms, some of that was lifted. I had been in a 12-step program prior, but it really didn't hit home for me until I got to my fourth step. And what really came out for me was I didn't have resentments towards these theological things or principles or institutions, but I had realized that I had been relying on others' actions and others, the way others were or felt or what they did for my own emotional security. Sort of like a child, how a child needs to rely upon, is mom and dad having a good day? Are they grumpy? Are they going to let me? For me, it was is my dad going to let me have soda? Is my mom going to let me get a snowball at the supermarket? And I didn't realize that was transferring into my adulthood. So I had been operating at this state in the food at this childlike, almost like my, one of my friends calls it, I'm immature spiritually in a sense. And after that fourth step and that fifth step with my vision sponsor, it really stood out to me, I have these core individuals in my life and I really am relying upon them for my spiritual security, that core emotional, I had a higher power at the time, but it didn't matter because my actions speak louder than my words. Someone mentioned, my higher power was in my head, not my heart. And in that moment, in that fifth step, and it still keeps happening to me. I still keep having this spiritual experience of, I'm a mom. I'm a wife, I'm a daughter, I'm a granddaughter. I can rely upon God for everything. My physical nourishment comes
time.
Okay, fine, from food, thank you. But my spiritual nourishment absolutely comes from, not from food anymore, but from my higher power. So it's really nice to be reminded of that this morning. I hope everybody has a good day. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Kaylee O. from New Jersey. Well, we have time for one more share. Is there someone who hasn't shared in the last couple days that would like to take that?
Avi V. Vancouver.
Avi V., go ahead.
Thanks so much for facilitating this meeting. It has been everything for me, my lifeline, right? Oh, this paragraph is so powerful. This week for me has been a week of being centered and peaceful and serene because I am fully connected with God, because I have let go of every decision, and there is so much freedom in that. And the funny thing is that, you know, I've been in recovery for a little while, and nobody could have explained that to me, even though many have. And I think we have to be beaten into a state of submission, that the food is a subtle foe, and it comes at us at every angle. And when we talk about prejudice, letting go of my old ideas, fully letting go, I don't understand God, and I don't have to understand God, and it would be arrogant for me to think that I do understand God, but I have to open myself to God fully. And I don't have to continue with someone else's conception of God. This is my conception of God, regardless of what it was at childhood or not. It's letting all of it go and opening myself up. And that idea of abandoning myself to God entirely, it's not weakness. There's so much strength in that, to have that faith and that dependence on a power greater than myself. There's no weakness in that. And there's no place for skepticism. I know where that train goes, and I don't have to live that way anymore. I am proud to be a child of God today. I am proud to be God's beloved today. And I'm not religious in the least bit. This is deeply spiritual for me. And I believe that God is everything. You know, where that says, a couple people mention it, God is either everything or God is nothing. God is absolutely everything. Everything. And there's just no question about it. And I love the ending here, where we found ourselves thinking, when enchanted by a starlit night, who made all of this? There's that feeling of being wrapped in love, in divine light. And that's where I choose to be today, not in the bondage of the food, not in the bondage of the food. There's no way to live that way. So I am so grateful for today, and thank you for letting me share and be part of this meeting. Wishing everyone a beautiful day. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Avi B. from Canada. All right, well, we're now going to read from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Michelle A.C. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Keep you until then.
Thanks, Dawn. This is Michelle A.C., gratefully recovered in Boulder, Colorado. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.